Everyone has a story to tell. What's yours? You're listening to Around the World with Dan Perry. Do you enjoy hearing tales of world adventure? Would you like travel advice from those who know the road well? Maybe you want to embark on a journey of your own, and you just need a bit of motivation to get started. You'll find all of that and more on Around the World with Dan Perry. Coming at you from Helsinki, Finland. Katie and I made it here a couple days ago, and we've been having a great time staying with some friends. But this episode mainly talks about our time in Iceland. We had about an hour or so after doing an awesome hike before our bus picked us up, so I squeezed in a short podcast, and I only had one chance to do it, so it's going to come off as slightly disjointed, but apologies in advance, but I think it pretty much explains what we did, where we went. We talk a lot about costs. We're going to put a final tally of our total costs for the country on my website, which of course is 1000daysbetween.com. And you can go there for all sorts of other information about our time in Iceland. I'm going to keep this introduction short, and let's just get right into my podcast that I have previously recorded about Iceland. Greetings from Slippigil campsite in Borsmork, Iceland. This is day four of Katie and my epic journey mostly around Asia. It's also day four for us in Iceland, the beginning of our trip. It feels like a lifetime ago when Katie's parents drove us to Chicago and dropped us off for our overnight flight to Iceland. And we've just finished an amazing hike. We went from Skogar to here in Borsmork, and I'm going to talk about that today. And we're going to split this podcast into three parts. First, I'm going to talk about our trip. Next, I'm going to give you guys some lessons that we've learned. Although, to be fair, we can't give you too many lessons. It's only been 4 days. But we're going to give you a few tips on Iceland that we've learned and things that we wish we would have known beforehand. And then finally, Katie's going to talk about one aspect of coming here that I think we did a really great job of, and that was food preparation. So stay tuned for that. And if you're wondering how to follow along, you can always hit the subscribe button in iTunes or Stitcher or wherever you get your podcasts. And you can also go to my website, 1000daysbetween.com. That's the number 1000daysbetween.com. And from there, you'll find a little text box where you can enter your email address, and I'll send you updates on this podcast, on my blog entries, on some cool photos. And be sure to check in on my website if you're not there already when you're listening to this show, because I'm going to put up some photographs, which I think will turn out really, really well, of this spectacular hike, so you can see what it looks like. Now, let's talk about the trip a little bit. Katie's parents, like I said, dropped us off at the airport in Chicago, and our flight was pretty uneventful. It went overnight, but since there's a five-hour time difference, that meant not much sleep at all. The flight was maybe 5 hours long, and just a little bit of on and off, drifting in and out of sleep. So by the time we landed, I was really out of it, and so was Katie. Getting through immigration was a breeze. Then we had to get money. And the only thing I'll say here is we almost got the exchange rate wrong. It's about 100 to 1. And so we wanted to take out a couple $100 in cash. We almost took out $2,000 in cash because we thought it was 20,000 kroners. Something to be aware of when you're really tired in airports is just double check that exchange rate so you don't make that mistake. Luckily, we figured it out beforehand. And yes, the ATMs, I think they do allow you to take out 20,000 kroners at once, or 2,000 US dollars. That's because this is a very expensive country, as we already knew beforehand. But actually, let's go back and talk about our decision to come here. We are starting this long journey. Like I said, we wanted to start in St. Petersburg, Russia, and the flights there were quite expensive. So we started looking around, saying, "Ah, what other cities are nearby?" Oh, well, Helsinki, Finland is right there. How much are those flights? It turns out about half as much, and they had a layover in Iceland. And I'm sure many of you are aware of this already, but Iceland Air, the main airline that serves this wonderful country, they have a program where you can extend your layover for up to a week at no extra charge. So we decided to do that. Now, of course, we knew Iceland is extremely expensive, so we were kind of worried about how long we would stay. I only wanted to stay for a couple of days. Katie wanted to stay longer. Looking back, I wish we had stayed even longer still. I wish we had used the whole week. And I think the main thing that got me was looking at car rentals. It's like $150 a day to rent a car. And if you want to rent a camper van where you can actually sleep, then it's maybe $200 a day just to start. And it goes up from there. We kind of wanted to avoid all of that. Then we looked into maybe getting bicycles. And until maybe a week ago, that was our plan. We were going to rent bikes for like $35 a day and ride around a peninsula. But then we figured out from the bus schedule that that wasn't going to work either. So I think on the day before we left, we scrapped that plan and decided to look for a hike. And we ended up choosing what is probably the most popular hike in Iceland, but it's popular for a reason, the Skógar to Borsmark hike. And I think if I had a full week and I could go back and tell my prior self, like, hey, here's what you should do, I would have said, hike the whole trail, because we only hiked the first section of it, and there's 4 more days where you can hike going north that I think are really beautiful as well. And I kind of wish we had done that, but we just don't have time. And the reason why I would have stayed longer is because we've been spending, well, $15 to $20 a night per person to camp, which is expensive, but at least that's kind of our only expense day by day. And the biggest expense was just getting here. And I'll get to that during the show. But we still weren't quite sure of the bus schedule and how to get here when we got to the airport. And we both downloaded this Strato app, which is the public bus company that runs around all around Iceland. This app was pretty good, but it left a little bit to be desired. It made it look like the tickets for the buses were, I think, like 340 kroners per ticket, which is like $3.40. That sounds totally reasonable to go all the way across southern Iceland to the start of this trail. But what we didn't realize was that where it says ticket, they probably should have used the word coupon, because you need, I think, 2 tickets just to go to Reykjavik. And one of the legs of this journey, we needed like 16 tickets. So it actually got really, really expensive. And that was just for the public bus. There's also some private companies that run routes straight to the trailhead and straight to the end. So the first thing we did was figure all that out. And we decided to buy tickets to go south to north, starting in Skogar, which is on the coast. And just so you know, there's a road that runs all around Iceland along the coast. It's Route 1, it's the loop line. That road is paved, it's in good condition. You can just rent a car if you come here and just drive the whole thing. But if you want to go inside, into the interior, you need some sort of not just a four-wheel drive vehicle. That's not going to do it. You need a high clearance vehicle, and you need to know how to cross rivers in a bus or in a truck. The vehicles that make it out to here, out to Borsmark, are giant, and it's really cool to watch them drive right across the river. So we decided to go and ahead and book one of these tickets home, or back home, I mean back to Reykjavik from our last campsite. We did that right away from the airport, and that was really expensive. We'll put up all the money that we spent up on the website. But then we wanted to save some money getting out to the trailhead. So we decided to take the public bus. Well, there wasn't a direct route. We'd had to take 4 buses. And the first one, it already seems super expensive. It was like $25 or $30 just to go like an hour to the outskirts of Reykjavik by this public bus. And that's per person. So it's kind of crazy how expensive things are here. And then we transferred, we took another bus. And we didn't even actually go to Reykjavik yet. We're going to do that later today. But oh, I should jump back and say one other thing that I was worried about or concerned a little bit about was getting fuel. We decided to bring my MSR Dragonfly stove. And that's because the reason we brought it on this trip is because you can put any fuel in it, which mainly means gasoline or petrol, same stuff you put in your car. So you can find gasoline just about anywhere in the world. Now, we also have a jet boil, which boils water much, much quicker, but it's kind of only good for boiling water. That's the main reason you'd use it. And the reason why we like the Dragonfly is because you can actually adjust the temperature to boiling or to just simmering. And the other downside of the jet boil or any of these gas canister stoves is you have to find the gas canister, which we figured we could find it, but we might waste a few hours doing that. And since we only had 4 days in Iceland, we didn't want to waste a lot of time looking for fuel. But we still needed to find gasoline. Now, the first thing we did was stash some of our stuff that we weren't going to need for this hike at a rental car company. And we quickly found that. That one was called Geyser, or in English, it's Geyser. And in Icelandic, it's like Geysir. It's basically the same word. And on our way back to the airport from that rental car company, I just happened to see a fuel pump, which was awesome because I was able to just fill up the bottle. It was like $1.50 for all the fuel we would need for this trek. So we saved some good money in that way. And it kind of made me think of a nice tip in general, is that in order to do a lot of these longer hikes, you need fuel, and you can't bring fuel on an airplane. But there are always rental car companies right next to airports, and a lot of them probably have their own fuel pumps, so you can always fill it up. And even if it's a little bit more expensive than the normal gas stations you'd find, it doesn't really matter because you're looking at typical prices around the world will be $1 to $2 at the most per liter of gasoline, and that'll last you a week when you're cooking with one of these fuel bottles. So if you have to spend an extra dollar, it's really a minimal extra price. All right, so on to the trip. We took a couple buses, then we had a long layover, I guess you'd call it, at Selfoss to catch our third bus, and it was like 5 hours. And we thought this is the last bus of the day that we're gonna take, and we thought maybe we'll camp here overnight, but it didn't seem like that nice of a place to camp. We could have caught a bus the next morning, but also we'd get a later start that way. So we decided to wait it out, but the problem was it started raining right away, and it was cold, and it was kind of miserable actually. So we did find a good spot to cook lunch outside, but there was no shelter, and we were just getting drenched. So we walked back to the bus stop, and there wasn't really a bus station. There was just the gas station, and so we just went inside. We got 2 cups of coffee that cost $8, and that was their cheapest thing. And we just sat there for like 3 hours watching it rain. We couldn't see the sun. We had no idea where that was. It was really crappy, and I was kind of regretting even having come to Iceland because I'm like, man, we're not even going to see anything, and we're spending all this money, and this kind of sucks. We thought about taking one of these private buses, and that could have saved us about 1.5 hours from Selfoss to the trailhead. But we also figured we'd save about $90 by taking the public bus. Although we didn't know the exact cost of the public bus because this app that we were using doesn't tell you. And again, it makes it look like it's a lot cheaper than it actually is. So we waited and we waited. And the bus came on time. Everything was really timely. And I should also say, at all these bus stops, there was free Wi-Fi, so that was a really good thing. Same with the airport, free Wi-Fi, it's fast. So the bus came, it was on time. It took us the rest of the way to the trailhead, which again was at Skogar. And the first thing we noticed was this giant waterfall, probably taller than Niagara Falls, I'm guessing, just coming out of the mountain and next to all these really emerald green cliffs. It was just spectacular scenery, just beautiful. It was still raining though. So we set up our tent. We had to pay I think $15 per person to camp there, so $30 total, which again, it sounds like a lot just for setting up a tent, but this is Iceland and that's about as cheap as it gets for lodging options. So we were okay with that. Then we kind of just had to wait it out and cook dinner. By this point, it was like 9 o'clock at night anyway, so we weren't going to get much else done during the day. And it really started to pour. I mean, it was coming down hard. So we were glad to just be inside the tent and getting everything dry because it was so drenched from earlier in the day. So that was our first day. And at this point, other than seeing that waterfall, we hadn't really even done anything. And it seemed like a really long day because we landed at 6:30 in the morning and went to bed at like 10 at night. It was still light out. It's August, so it's not quite 24 hours of daylight, but it's pretty darn close still. It probably gets dark at about 11 here, and I don't know exactly what time the sun comes up, but it can't be later than 4, maybe even 3. So you still don't need a headlamp in August. You still are, anytime you're awake, you're gonna be in sunlight. So that's a good thing. Let's see, let's go on to day two. We got up. And lo and behold, the sky was totally clear. I slept like a rock, and I didn't even know that it had stopped raining, which was unbelievable. It was amazing that it was all gone, and we were so happy to be able to hike in good weather. Now we took down camp, and there were a lot of people camping there. There were a lot of these camper vans that you can rent for $200+ a day. There were also a lot of tents. And luckily, we had chosen a spot that where the water didn't pool underneath us, so we were relatively dry by the morning. I was happy to see that. And once we took down camp, we checked out the waterfall. It was amazing. A lot of other people were doing that. There were tour groups coming in, large buses full of people. This is kind of to be expected in a country that's touristy like Iceland. And we were kind of happy to get along and start walking down the trail. Just to get away from the giant crowds. It didn't take too long. We started hiking to the top of the waterfall first, up a metal staircase, got a good view from the top, and then continued uphill. As we went uphill, there were fewer and fewer people, but there were more and more waterfalls. That was something totally unexpected. We hadn't really researched this hike at all before we started. So, we really didn't even know what we were going to see. But man, we just walk uphill about 10 minutes, waterfall. Walk uphill 10 more minutes, waterfall. And I'm not talking about some rinky-dink little waterfall. These were all, if you had just seen even one of these on any given day, you'd go, whoa, it's so amazing. I mean, by the end of the day, we were like, oh, another waterfall. Okay, maybe that's the last one. Oh, nope, here's another one. All coming off the same river. I couldn't believe it. The river was just flat and then falls 100 feet. Flat, falls 300 feet. Just crazy and beautiful scenery. And probably by midday, we started seeing taller mountains with snow still on them. That was really cool. And the crowd, the day hiking crowds, we'll call them, they kind of petered out. A lot of people just hike up for an hour or two, then hike back down to their car. And so that's a huge advantage of coming into the interior is you can get away from 90, 95% of the people by doing that. So that's one big lesson we learned. So the whole day was just hiking uphill. So if you are not in great hiking shape, you might want to reconsider this. I think we went up like 1,000 meters. We started at about sea level and ended up camping in this hut about 1,000 meters up. With snow around us still. It was cold, it was windy. The good thing was it was gradual. There were never any really steep uphills. It was just up, 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 up pretty much the entire day. And it was a long day for us. It was only like 12 kilometers, something like that, but we were pretty tuckered up by the end of it. And luckily the warden, as they call it, the guy who runs the campground, he was a really friendly local guy who gave us some great advice. He told us to camp at this place called Sleepy Gill on our last night and told us about a cool day hike that we could do. So we took advantage of that. And he let us come inside and cook outside of out of the wind. cook dinner and on his stove too. That was awesome. And this campsite doesn't have any access to water, so he has to drive down to the river to get it. So we were happy to have some water. Now, this is the most expensive site we stayed at. It was $20 per person, but money well spent, I think. You could also stay inside for $65 in this hut. The wind was intense, though, so we set up our tent right next to the hut and just hoped that it wouldn't blow down. Now, once it started getting later, the wind actually quieted down a bit, but it picked up immediately as soon as the sun came back up a few hours later. And I barely slept that night. I don't know why. The sun, maybe it's this jet lag thing, like second day jet lag that I think is pretty common, but I just couldn't sleep at all. Whereas the first night I just was out cold. So I wasn't very happy the next morning, but then again, because of the fantastic scenery and beautiful weather from the first day, I was actually elated. And the second day, the weather looked just as promising. It was clear skies, beautiful. We were about halfway done with our hike already. It was only about 25 kilometers total. So we took our time. We didn't set out right away early in the morning. We slept in a little bit. We made a slow breakfast, got everything packed. We chatted with the warden of this campground. And then we took off. And what we noticed here was that probably 90% of the people doing this trail are going north to south, and we are going to south to north. I don't know why most people go north to south. The books all say that it's better to go south to north, so I don't quite get that. One big downside if you're going north to south is that for you would be the last day. You're always going to be looking back to find these waterfalls, whereas we were watching them come, and that was cool to approach one from afar and just walk up to it. Other than that, I guess either way it works perfectly well. And I think the way we went, definitely there's going to be more uphill and overall gain, but on this day, the downhill for us was really steep, and that'd be a hard uphill to do if you're going north to south. So anyway, just a few words on which direction to go. It kind of doesn't really matter, but we chose south to north. So we set off mid-morning. Then the first thing we had to do was cross a glacier, which was really cool. We walked right across the snow and down a little bit, then up a glacier on the other side. And at this point, we kind of had a mixture of this volcanic ash that we were walking over and snow. It was spectacular scenery. We could still see the ocean from here too, by the way. And it's August, and it's interesting being here in August because it's a little cool. It's like I said, the first day it was rainy. Sometimes you really feel cold. I don't think it ever got below freezing, but it was probably just a bit above at night. And it's mid-August. One interesting thing, when we were taking those public buses, we saw a sign that said, "Attention, our winter is coming soon. Our hours are going to change starting on August 17th. We'll move to our winter hours." Like, that's when winter begins here, August 17th. Okay. It's almost August 17th now. I think it's like the 11th. Anyway, we went a few ups and downs the second day, then we began this really long downhill after the first couple of hours, where we were way up there in the middle of the snow, just constantly walking across snow. Then we left that area, and suddenly it became full of moss and lichen. The mountains got really green right away. And there was a steep downhill leading into this beautiful valley that we crossed. There was a nice flat section where we had lunch, and we kind of came out of this area that we could see forever because we were up so high. And then once we came out of that area, after like 3 hours of walking, then we could see our campsite, but it was still really far away. So we were, and way below us too. So we still had a long ways to go. So it was down, 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 down. Whereas the first day it was up, 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 up. This was probably a little better for us, harder on the knees, but easier on the lungs to go downhill all day. And so we kept moving toward this campsite called Basar. We got to Basar middle of the afternoon. Again, this was such a beautiful day. You're just gonna have to see the pictures. It's stunning scenery. It's almost hard too hard to describe. These volcanoes, the mountains, all the snow, the ash, looking at the ocean, the waterfalls. It's just amazing, gorgeous scenery. And I'm gonna put up pictures of all of that on my website. So we could see the campsite forever, and finally we got there, and what this warden guy recommended to us was that we stop in Slippy Gill. So we started asking around, where is Slippy Gill? And no one really seemed to know. Finally, we got this kid to call his mom, who's the warden of some other campsite, and ask about it. She finally knew where it was. So if you are going to camp there, which I do recommend, you're going to have to ask around a lot because there's a lot of signs. The trails were really easy to follow the whole way. The signage was great for the main sites. But this Slippy Gill just kind of slippied out of their minds when they're making these signs because it's not on any sign anywhere. But we had to probably walk another half hour, 45 minutes next to this river and then cross it on a portable bridge that they set up. That was pretty cool, just for pedestrians. And then there's a couple of really big campgrounds with a lot of people, and there's this one smaller site that's kind of hidden called Slippy Gill, and that's where we ended up staying. And I really liked it because it's a lot quieter than the others. All right, so that was our second day, and that was the end of our hike. Now, it wasn't a particularly hard hike, but I'm really glad we did it. Katie was worried about her knees hurting, and it turned out she was fine. But it's probably a good thing we didn't push ourselves too hard right away on this trip. But on the other hand, like I said, this trail continues north for 4 more days, and I'm sure it's just amazing. And if we had done that, our only expense each day would be $20 at most for camping. Actually, Slippy Gill was our cheapest campsite. It was only $12 per person per night. So that's another advantage of staying here. And then finally today, this is day 4, and we're going to fly out in a couple of hours. We have to catch the bus back to Reykjavik, then head out to the airport. Hope we don't smell too bad for customs to let us through. And so for today, we just did a short day hike. We went to the main campground and did a kind of a round trip loop that went up to the top of this hill called Valahnulekur. And I'll write that down on the website. Pretty much everyone who comes to this part of the campground goes up to this hill because there's nothing else higher than it that's really close by. So you have a really awesome 360-degree view of both valleys that surround this area. It's really awesome. You can probably hear an airplane flying over. We've seen a few of those. We've seen some helicopters. So it is quite touristy. You're never really alone here. If you're looking for a really secluded hike, this is definitely not it. And if you're looking for a secluded country, sorry, man. Iceland is no longer that place. There's just a lot of tourism here. But I will say, in the middle of this hike, where no one could get there just by driving, there actually were not too many people because everyone who had gotten to that point had at least hiked like 5 hours and had 5 hours more to hike, minimum. Although that, I guess if you don't want to properly backpack, like carrying everything, you can also get by. There are these huts in the middle, and if you're willing to pay a lot of money, you can stay in them. And most of them have stoves, although I should warn you, not all of them do. Sometimes, like that first night, there was no stove, at least not that I could see. So I'm glad we brought our own because we would have been screwed without one. So let's move on, and I'll give you guys a bit of advice for when you're coming here. The biggest one that comes to mind is bring lots of money. This place is expensive. Now, I don't mean bring cash necessarily. Pretty much everywhere we've been, including the campsites, will take a credit card. So that's definitely an easier way than just taking out a ton of cash and hoping that you've gotten the right amount. You don't have a bunch left at the end, which we maybe made that mistake. And by far, our biggest expense for this trip has been transportation. I think we probably spent like $175 each just to take a bus for maybe 2.5 hours round trip each way, so maybe 5 hours total. It's like crazy expensive to ride the buses here. If you're a cheapskate backpacker and you've got a bit of extra time on your hands, you can definitely hitchhike here. We saw a few people doing it, and so many people rent cars, and it's like one couple that's renting it that someone will definitely pick you up. It's a very safe country. It's a highly developed country, but the prices are just outrageous. It's definitely the most expensive country I've ever been to. But one area where we had a huge win was with food. We dehydrated all of our own food at home, and we basically didn't buy anything other than that cup of coffee when we were waiting for the bus, as far as food's concerned. So while the food here is really expensive, you can bring your own. And Katie's going to talk about that and how we did it and what we brought and what we spent in just a minute. If you don't want to spend a ton of money, I would definitely bring a tent. Pretty much every town, including Reykjavik, has a campground in it. And there might be a few places where you can camp for free. Although I should warn you, the farmers apparently don't appreciate campers randomly pulling up and camping on their lawns. So be aware that you might get woken up in the middle of the night if you do that. I learned that from some friends who had that happen to them. But otherwise, you can always camp. But like I said at the beginning, we've only been here for 4 days, so we've only learned the very basics of tips. We were just discussing, though, is it worth coming here? Was it worth coming here for us or not? And definitely now we think yes, it was very much worth it. Our first day really sucked because of the weather and because we kept paying tons of money for these buses. But every day since then has been awesome. And so I think overall we're really glad we came here. And who knows, we might do this again in the future if we have to fly to Europe from the US or vice versa. Try to catch another one of these long layovers, maybe extend it to a week and do a 5 or 6 day hike somewhere else on the island. And next time we do this, we're definitely going to research what we want to do before we buy the plane tickets. Because had we known that there were these really cool hikes, we probably would have extended it longer just to kind of bring down that daily cost. Because the transportation to and from the trails is definitely going to be your highest expense if you are a backpacker. All right, let's move on, and I'm going to bring in Katie to give you guys some tips on food and preparing it and what we did to make our meals delicious and save a lot of money while we were here in Iceland.
Okay, hey guys. So I'm finally on the podcast.
Yeah, it's been what, 52 episodes or something, and
Yeah, you've
finally my
been doing this
wife.
for almost 2 years, and I finally get to come on the podcast, so here
Okay,
it goes.
you're in the club.
So I'm going to talk a little bit about today about planning food for a trip, which is something that I've really have gotten into in the last several years. I guess I'm an organizer in general as a person, and it just gets me giddy planning for a trip and being like, yeah, I saved some money and I'm eating healthy food. And I just really love that. And I guess you're pretty frugal, and you've taught me a lot about how to save money. And I wouldn't be traveling for a year if I hadn't learned how to be so frugal from you. So I guess they both go hand in hand, the dehydrating and the eating healthy and the organizational skills. So I got a few recipes this time from a website because the last few years I've been in China, I gave out some gear to friends, including my backpacking recipe books. So because they've been lent out, I was going through our shelf at home when we were there, and they weren't there anymore. So I just went online and I found a couple great resources, including backpackingchef.com and Recipes for Adventure. And that's where we got the recipes for our meal. So we ended up having a chicken curry rice with vegetables for our four lunches. And we, first day and last day, had the luxury of heating that up and getting out the stove and making it nice and hot. But the 2 days while we were trekking, we just added water to the rice and the chicken and vegetables in the morning. We had breakfast. And by the time we were, you know, midday hiking, pull out that baggie of food and it's all rehydrated, which, I don't know, it's just kind of magical how that happened. I just love watching the food come back to life.
You're kind of nerdy like that.
I am nerdy like that. That's sort of my nerdy thing. Everybody's got a nerdy thing. You have a lot of nerdy things.
True.
So you can give me this one.
All right. Yeah. This one's yours.
So I just love that, that it's watching it come back to life and then knowing that I know everything that's in this meal. And a big deal for us, why this works well for us, is mostly because I eat not so much and you eat a lot.
Probably twice as much as you.
Yeah, if not more. And when I do the food planning, I can portion out one portion size for myself in a baggie and two portion sizes for you in a baggie. And then I'm happy, you're happy. You're not trying to force me to eat the rest of the meal because I plan for the food.
Right. Now, are these portions that you got online?
Some recipes will say on the recipe how many portions it is. This is enough for one portion. This is enough for two portions. And so I kind of watch for that. And of course, our other meal is a little bit different. The other meal that we had was chili. And so I just made a big old pot of chili and put that on the fruit leather tray. So when you have a dehydrator, I think I got mine from Amazon, maybe for about $40. And that was probably 7 years ago. So it's well earned the money back.
Oh, even this one trip, we saved more than that.
Yeah.
For sure.
So the cool thing is that if you're buying a dehydrator, you want to make sure you have one that has both the fruit leather trays and the mesh trays. So the fruit leather trays, you can put a smoothie on there, you can put spaghetti sauce on there, you can put anything runny on there. And so that's what we put the chili on. I made a big pot of chili and put that onto the fruit leather tray and let that go. And basically what I did was I measured out how many cups I was putting onto each tray, knowing that you were probably going to have 3 cups of chili and I was probably going to have 1.5 to 2 cups of chili.
Oh, so it's actually closer for the chili.
With chili, you know,
you can eat more.
That's a pretty special one, you know. Chili is just really good. It's hot, it's hearty, it's just really amazing.
Yeah, usually when
I can't stop eating that one when we had that for dinner, I was just like, oh, I'll have some more.
Oh, so good. But usually when I see you eat, I get a little worried because if I ate that little, I'd be dead already. I would have starved. I don't know how you do it.
Yeah, well, here I am.
It's like a special power that you can barely eat.
Every day
eat
I keep on going. It keeps working out this way.
Yeah, same here though.
So that's kind of how I did it for the chili for that. So I kind of just know, okay, this tray has 4 cups and that's about what we need. You might have 2.5, I might have 1.5, and put that into a baggie. So after the food is done dehydrating, for the chili, I put, so much into each baggie based on the measurements that I put under the trays. And for the other meals, some recipes are different. Some of them are, you put the whole thing on and then you just put it in a bag. Others may have it portioned out. So the Mexican taco beef recipe that we did, that one basically said, half cup rice, 1/4 cup of peppers, and this much of like the onions or whatever. And then you add the seasoning to it. So you put the seasoning, the veg, the rice, the beans, the meat all into the bag, measured out for one portion size, and then I just double yours. So actually the chili or making spaghetti can be a little bit faster because you just pour that onto a tray and you don't have to like divvy it up into the bags because there's the amount of time that it takes to prep it, it's kind of equal to cooking dinner. So you cook the dinner, you chop up the stuff, you put it on the trays, but then what's extra, what's more than what it takes to make a normal dinner or lunch, is the divvying it up into the baggies afterwards. And for the chili, you don't need to divvy it up. You don't need to be like, oh, a fourth cup here and a half cup of this and a teaspoon of this.
Yeah, because it's all mixed together.
It's already mixed together. Yeah. So that's kind of the, you know, the great thing about chili is it's really easy, right? Actually, we just went camping with a bunch of our girlfriends from Madison, or I went, not you. I went out camping with a bunch of my girlfriends and made a big pot of chili for that as well and just put it in a big, huge container and froze it and brought it out car camping. And it's great. It's super easy.
And delicious,
yeah. So those are two different dinners we did. So I kind of wanted to mix it up. I could have gotten even easier and just done chili all four nights, but which you wouldn't care about because you can eat the same thing every day.
Yep.
I need to mix it up a little bit or I go a little crazy. So, we had two dinners of each, but the lunch was the same just because I also didn't want to go crazy dehydrating numerous meals. So those were our lunches and our dinners. And they wrap up pretty small into a baggie. It really does pack down nice. And no issue with getting it through customs. You can travel with it. I don't think it'd be an issue in most places.
No, probably not, since it's all dried.
Right. So, then we also did our typical breakfast. We always eat oatmeal for breakfast. So we had oatmeal and just put like a bunch of fixings in a bag of coconut nuts. And oatmeal is just so great for camping because it's so easy. Just add water and you're done. And for snacks, what we did was fruit leathers, which is really nice because I like having fruit every day. And when I'm backpacking and camping, it's no exception. So it's nice to have that, the sugar from the fruit and just to have that as a nice snack. So I made two giant batches of smoothies and filled the whole blender. One was strawberry and peach and one was strawberry banana because the strawberries were really cheap when we were home, which is really special for us coming from China because strawberries, blueberries, raspberries are so expensive there.
Oh, for sure.
So when we got back from Beijing, we were both just eating tons of berries every day. And so the trick to making a fruit leather is that you have to, if you can't just pour the whole smoothie on there, it'll become like a powder. I don't know if you remember, you probably don't remember because you never remember food stuff, but
right.
A long time ago when I first started doing this, I didn't add applesauce once. I didn't have it. And it was just like powder almost. Couple of flakes, a bigger chunk flakes, but it was really powdery.
Okay.
And so the trick is you need to add, at least a half cup of applesauce to it. And the applesauce is what gives it kind of like that sponginess. It gives us that softness. Apples are just good for that. So pour that onto a tray. Dehydrate that. Maybe like 8 hours. So if you are working, you can, put it in before work and turn it off after. Or do it overnight while you're sleeping as well. That's another good time to do it. You do have to be careful about over dehydrating because it can get too crisp. And then what I do when it's finished is I kind of peel it off the fruit leather tray and I just cut it in half. So it looks like two letter C's or two moons.
Sure.
And then I put it on parchment paper and I just roll it up. So it's basically a fruit roll up.
Yeah.
But no extra added stuff to it, no preservatives. You have to eat it, quickly. I did add lemon. Actually, I forgot about that. I added lemon to it, knowing that I was making this 2 weeks before our trip.
Oh, does that preserve it a little bit?
Exactly, yeah.
Huh.
So I did add a little bit of that to it. We actually have a few of those left, so we get to eat those in the next few days.
Dill. All right.
Pretty exciting.
They're really good. They're not quite as sweet as a fruit roll-up, but they otherwise taste pretty much the same.
I didn't add any sugar to them.
Yeah.
Just a natural, like it would be in a smoothie. So the last thing that we did for snacks, for dehydrating, was I made something new this year from the same website that I found from the backpackingchef.com website. They have a bunch of barks on there, and I've never seen this in other books before, I don't think, or if I did, I just missed it or thought, yuck, I don't want to eat bark. I don't know what it was, but this time I saw it and I'm like, oh, what's this? And they had sweet potato. And as you know, I love sweet potatoes. I think that they're just delicious and they're also really good for you. So basically he had a whole section of bark recipes that you can dehydrate for starches, which is really nice because I think the fruit is great for a snack, but it doesn't give you long-term energy when you're backpacking. It gives you, you know, kind of a short burst, kind of feel like if your blood sugar, like yesterday, my blood sugar was dipping and I'm like, I need to have a snack now. Yeah. Like, you know, just going, and all of a sudden it just hits me like I need some sugar. And the fruit leathers are great for that. And the sweet potato bark, it's the same thing as making the fruit leather, really. It's just make mashed potatoes. And there's this recipe called for cinnamon. And I forget what else. I'll post this. You can post this in your show notes. It calls for cinnamon. But I also love mixing up when I bake sweet potatoes with making savory. So I think next time I'll try doing some savory ones as well with some curry or some Indian spices or some different things like that. And you make mashed potatoes, you pour them onto a fruit leather tray, and you let it go. This one called for a half cup or a fourth cup of apple juice. And either I over dehydrated it or it was, the apple juice was, it just made it a bit too brittle, which I think it's supposed to be more like a chip. But I think what I would do next time, if I was going to rehydrate the potatoes and make it into mashed potatoes, I'd keep it the same. But if we're going to eat it as a snack, I would add applesauce instead, just to make it a little bit softer, because it was pretty chewy.
Yeah, it was. So, yeah.
But that's the thing about dehydrating is you kind of find what you like and you try it and you find a recipe and then you make it your own, play around with it just like I do for cooking, pretty much. So yeah, that's it. Those are our meals. And total cost was about $60 to $65.
For 4 days.
For two people. And so we averaged that out. It's a little bit skewed because the oatmeal obviously was way cheaper than making chili or Mexican beef because they'll have meat in them.
Right.
So the average, if you average it out, it would be, you know, 3 meals a day times 4. So it's about, what would we say, $2.50 per person?
About $2.50 per meal per person.
Yeah.
Roughly.
So, and of course, we could have done that cheaper if we didn't put meat in those, but
still, like, that's pretty cheap.
So, and you know, yesterday when we were hiking and we stopped at the hut up on the glacier. I forget the name of the hut, but you probably already talked about that.
Yeah.
So we were up there. There's this whole group, maybe like four different groups, and they all had the little freezer-dried meals. And, you know, in the U.S., those cost like, what, I'm guessing $7 each.
Probably.
And that would be for me. It cost me $7. But because you need to eat for two, that would cost you $14.
Right.
So that would be a lot, $21 for us to have per meal.
Yeah, you can save a lot of money by dehydrating.
Just because you and I, you know, you need more to eat. Right. So yeah, and I think, you know, I've talked to people who use those. And they're hit or miss. Some of them I've heard are pretty good. Some are not so great. So, but I've never tried. I pretty much got into backpacking and dehydrating at the same time. So, yeah. So that's kind of the gist of the dehydrating stuff.
Right. Let alone if you had come to Iceland and just bought all your food here, it would be exorbitant. So I would definitely bring food from home, whether it's those freeze-dried bags or if you want to go one step further and dehydrate it, definitely bring it to Iceland.
I think every friend that we've talked to, or if not every, most of them, we're kind of asking around for tips with people before we left and trying to figure out like what people do and what they like when they went here and make it our own style, of course. But everyone pretty much said that they went over on their food budget. That was the one thing. And for us, we went over on, we don't really have a budget, but transportation was our most expensive thing. So,
right. Yeah. The food was kind of an afterthought as far as prices for that. That, like, you have to eat anyway, and we did it pretty much as cheap as we could possibly do it.
Right.
So I think we really scored big on that one.
Yeah. So I did a bit of a, like, Katie and Dan versus Iceland.
All right, let's do that.
I'm going to do that here. I was just going to post it on social media, but I could also tell the world this way as well.
Let's close it off with this.
Yeah, so basically, like I said, I wasn't so frugal before I met you. I was, I mean, not extravagant, but I also was definitely not the cheapest person on the block. So you've made me a bit cheaper with how I spend my money when I'm traveling and when I'm at home and everything, right? But I'm not as extreme as you yet. So we'll
You'll
see.
Get there.
We'll see what happens in the next year, right? So I was kind of thinking, like, jokingly, like, oh, it's sort of like Iceland versus Katie and Dan, with especially with the buses. So, food, Iceland gets 0 points because we have not bought any food here.
Yeah, other than
on
that
this
coffee.
Trip. Other than that coffee. So, Katie and Dan get 1 point. Iceland 0 for food.
All right. Round two.
Transportation.
Ooh.
Iceland wins.
Oh, big time. I already talked
and
about
Katie
the prices.
And Katie and Dan 0. So, it was still cheaper than renting a car, but as we were buying tickets that first day, I was like, dang, I think renting a car could have been cheaper if we could have gotten a deal. You know, we waited too long to get a good deal on a rental, but if we would have gotten a good deal, I was starting to think, like, man, we could have just rented a car for cheaper than this.
It almost literally was cheaper to rent a car than to take the public buses. Yeah. But
it would not have worked out with the backpacking trip.
Exactly.
Because we did not want to out and back. I don't want to climb that hill again.
Right.
And go back that way.
Right. We would have had to just leave our car there, and we'd be burning through $200 a day just on nothing.
Right. Exactly. So Iceland wins the point for transportation.
Okay.
All right. Round
three.
So right now we're 1-1.
We're 1-1. Yeah.
Lodging. I said Iceland 0, Katie and Dan 0, because we expected to camp overnight, and neither one of us won a point really on that one.
Yeah, camping is expensive here, but not crazy expensive. The most we spent total was $40 for a night, which to sleep in a tent, that's ridiculous in most countries. But then if we had stayed in a hotel here, you're looking at $200-$300.
Yeah. And our cheapest one was $12 a night.
Yeah. So 24 for total.
Yeah. So, all right. So,
so I think we did pretty well. We couldn't have done much better.
But this is the cheapest option other than, like you said, bush camping, which really I don't want to do that because I want to be respectful to the country. Iceland has decided to make laws against camping anywhere because tourists have just started pooping everywhere and leaving their trash behind and not leaving no people who... People who typically don't camp, I think, have started camping in Iceland because it's cheap. And so if you're not a camper, you might not have that philosophy of leave no trace. And that may have ruined it for the rest of us. So now we all have to camp on campsites.
Right.
So anyways, so that's a tie. Lodging, okay. Iceland 0, Katie and Dan 0.
So we're still at 1-1.
Yeah.
Okay, round 4.
Yeah, so coffee. Coffee was a tough one because... We did buy 2 coffees here because we had 5 hours to kill between 2 buses that we needed to take. And it was raining outside, and we wanted to sit inside of this coffee, gas station. And I felt like a real jerk to sit inside there for, well, we had like maybe 3 hours left after eating lunch after it started raining. I would have felt like a jerk sitting there for 3 hours not buying anything.
Right.
So
yeah.
we did buy 2 coffees in Iceland, but we also drank coffee 5 times with coffee that we brought from home with our amazing travel French press.
Yes.
So
I think, what is that, a slight win for us?
I think that's a slight win for us. I'm going to give us a point for that one. Coffee, Iceland 0, Katie and Dan 1.
Woohoo! So we win. 2-1.
2-1. So I think we saved $400 by not flying to St. Petersburg.
Right.
So this is how the whole thing started. We're only here in Iceland. This is not part of our original plan, right?
Yeah, I already went over that.
Okay,
but, yep.
So So we saved $400 by flying to Finland instead of St. Petersburg, and we spent about $400.
Oh, so it's a wash.
Slightly, maybe a few dollars over 400.
Each?
No, total.
Oh, total. Well, but we saved 400 each on the flights.
Oh, so. I didn't even think of that. Okay, duh.
Okay, so we actually saved money by coming here.
Yay!
All right, Iceland, thank you. You gave us money. All right, that worked out well. We'll have to do this again.
All right, if now we kind of got like both of our nerdy sides out, like my food nerdy and like your data and money nerdy. So, yeah.
All right, well, our bus is, I think it's here already. I just saw it pull in over the water. And so we better make sure we get to it before it leaves, because if we miss this, we're screwed and we'll miss our flight tonight.
All right. Well, thanks for finally letting me come on your podcast after all this time. Maybe I should be so honored to come on again.
Okay, maybe you'll be a regular guest.
Okay.
All right, thanks for coming on.
Yep.
And we will continue updating you as our trip progresses. We're going to be in Finland tomorrow, and I think we have a little surprise trip coming up to Estonia in a couple of days.
Yeah, so that was a surprise. A friend said, hey, let's take a day trip. So
that's going to be awesome. And then on to Russia. So stay tuned for all that, and I'll catch you next time.